Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, February 7, 2024. Activists in Western Sudan cry for help amidst ongoing conflict between Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces.
This is massive. This is the scale of Ukraine, the scale of Syria. These are the three biggest displacement crises in the world at the moment. And this is the one that is least talked about.
And over 200 million girls and women in Africa have undergone female genital mutilation.
WHO is committed to helping countries build capacity to provide health care and support the survivors of female genital mutilation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations agencies are appealing for $4.1 billion US dollars to provide urgent aid for more than 17 million civilians inside Sudan and those who have fled to neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations appeal got off to a poignant start with a video of Sudanese victims who recounted the terrible impact the war has had on their lives. Mena, a young Sudanese refugee in Egypt, said the war has robbed her and other children of their education.
But how can we build the future in this situation?
UN officials say Sudan's nearly 10-month-long conflict has fueled suffering of epic proportions. And yet, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths says the international community has largely forgotten the country amid high-profile crises in Gaza, Ukraine, and elsewhere.
But I don't think there's anywhere quite so tragic in the world today as Sudan. The figures speak for themselves. There's 25 million people in Sudan who need assistance. Half of them are children. That's an astonishing figure.
He says the expansion of fighting in Sudan, including to Al Jazeera, the country's so-called breadbasket, has worsened the situation. Nearly 18 million people face acute hunger. Diseases, including cholera, measles, and malaria, are spreading, and few health facilities are functioning. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, says the conflict between the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces has created one of the world's largest displacement and protection crises.
If you calculate people displaced inside and outside, you reach it easily 8-9 million people. This is massive. This is the scale of Ukraine, the scale of Syria. These are the three biggest displacement crises in the world at the moment. And this is the one that is least talked about.
The two officials who have jointly launched the Sudan and refugee response plans say the money requested will provide food and nutrition, shelter, clean water, and education for children. They say it also will help fight the scourge of gender-based violence and care for the survivors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, a group of activists called the Coordination of Displaced Persons and Refugee Camps in Darfur has issued an urgent appeal for humanitarian support to help the thousands of displaced individuals seeking refuge in camps across Darfur. The local group emphasizes the critical condition of these individuals amid the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces. Nabil Biagio has details.
Madam Rijal is the spokesperson for the Coordination of Displaced Persons and Refugee Camps team based in Zalinje in central Darfur. He's calling on the regional and international community to respond to the humanitarian situation in Darfur's five states, which he describes as critical.
This situation has escalated to a humanitarian catastrophe, affecting the Sudanese communities impacted by the war, who are in urgent need of emergency humanitarian assistance, food, life-saving medicines, drinking water, and shelter.
Tens of thousands of people displaced by the war in Darfur 20 years ago have remained in camps for internally displaced persons throughout the region and across the border with neighboring Chad. Rijal says the armed conflict between Sudan's rival forces that broke out in mid-April halted much-needed aid the IDPs relied on.
The displaced persons in Darfur camps have waited for over 20 years, relying on monthly food rations provided by the World Food Program, WFP. However, for over 10 months, they have not received their allocated food rations, resulting in a scarcity of essential food items such as wheat and corn, and the inability of host communities to cultivate crops due to the war.
He says the IDPs in Darfur camps also face the spread of diseases and malnutrition among children, pregnant women, and lactating mothers due to insufficient food, which could create a risk of mass starvation and disease outbreaks within the camps.
The United Nations, the United Nations Security Council, the African Union, peace-loving countries, regional and international humanitarian and human rights organizations must immediately send aid to those in need in displaced persons camps and refugee camps affected by the war, who are suffering from hunger, diseases, and harsh humanitarian conditions.
Rijal calls on Sudan's warring parties to immediately cease hostilities for the sake of the civilians, who he says are the primary and ultimate loser in this war, and to open safe humanitarian corridors for aid to reach those in need. He urges the international community to keep justice for victims on the agenda.
The issue of achieving justice and fairness for the victims and their families must not be forgotten, and efforts must be made to ensure that criminals do not escape punishment and to restore dignity to the victims by bringing all suspects who have committed genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity to the International Criminal Court. This issue is purely legal and does not accept bargaining, settlement, or compromise.
The United Nations says Sudan's nine-month conflict has displaced millions of people in Sudan and killed about 13,000 individuals. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Over 200 million girls and women alive today have undergone female genital mutilation in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East, where the procedure is commonly practiced. World Health Organization says 28 of the 30 countries where FGM is prevalent are in Africa. Mourinho Jambo reports.
Female genital mutilation, FGM, is mostly carried out on young girls between infancy and the age of 15. The practice has no health benefits for girls and women and instead causes severe health complications, among them difficulties in giving birth and increased risk of newborn deaths. WHO's Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says his agency helps countries train health workers to treat complications from genital mutilation in primary care settings.
WHO is committed to helping countries build capacity to provide health care and support the survivors of female genital mutilation and work with communities to prevent it. 4 million girls are at risk of this harmful practice each year. It harms the health and well-being of women and girls. It is a violation of their human rights.
Under the theme Her Voice, Her Future, investing in survivor-led movements to end female genital mutilation, the WHO says grassroots movements are key when it comes to fighting this scourge.
Health workers in countries where this practice occurs may be survivors themselves. They know the trauma and pain it causes. Many have turned that pain into advocacy and are speaking out against female genital mutilation. We stand with survivors to hear their voices, to ensure they have the care they need, and to support their efforts to stop FGM.
In East and Southern Africa, FGM is facing obstacles such as community beliefs and cultural practices, as millions of girls are at risk of undergoing the practice. The WHO report indicates that in several settings, there is evidence that healthcare providers are involved in performing FGM due to the belief that the procedure is safer when medicalized. Surum Ipato Korema, the chairperson of the Anti-FGM Board of Kenya, says all women must be involved in public education efforts to end the tradition.
Without engaging survivors in the campaigns, as the board, we cannot go anywhere. Because when you go to the grassroots, 90% of women are survivors of FGM.
The World Health Organization says treatment of health complications from FGM is substantial. UNFPA Global Coordinator for the FGM Trust Fund, Wissal Ahmed, says this should be a reason enough for policymakers to rethink about ending FGM.
In fact, the World Health Organization estimates that the health system cost for its complications is around $1.4 billion per year. So this amount of money, it's a very strong case for governments, because this is really an additional amount of money for already stretched health systems that are not really necessary if this was prevented.
The United Nations Population Fund says countries in East Africa with a high prevalence of FGM include Somalia with 98%, followed closely by Ethiopia at 65%, Kenya at 21%, Tanzania 10%, and Uganda at 0.3%. The report indicates that FGM was higher in the border areas of Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. They say this is because if a country or a county has stiff law against FGM, they can cross borders to areas that may still tolerate the practice. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in San Francisco.
More than 700 Botswana nationals could be kicked out of Ireland after the European country moved to drive down the number of asylum applicants. Last week, Ireland's justice minister indicated Algeria and Botswana will be added to a list of safe countries as part of measures to reduce the number of asylum seekers from Gaborone, Botswana. Reporter Mkundusi Dube has details.
According to figures from the island's Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, most of the 26,473 people who are seeking asylum in Ireland are from Africa. That includes 3,000 from Algeria and 709 from Botswana. Last week, the country announced it will add both Algeria and Botswana to a list of countries deemed to be safe. This will mean asylum seekers from these countries will no longer be guaranteed protection in Ireland and could be sent home. Expanding the number of countries deemed safe is seen as a key strategy to cracking down on rising asylum applications. Johanna Tandi Baloyi is a Botswana national based in Ireland and says the development is worrisome.
Of course, there should be a concern. Obviously, our country has been highlighted now. They realized there is apparently a lot of numbers of Botswana coming into the country. Remember, this happened at the same time when Ukraine is having the problem. So there were a lot of Ukrainians accommodated in the country. The biggest problem was now accommodation, which was so severe. The citizens started even complaining and worrying.
Under the new arrangement, applications from asylum seekers from safe countries will be fast-tracked. Baloyi says this could lead to mass deportations in the near future.
Obviously, if your application is not successful, they look into a case, they realize, oh, this is not really something that one could say it's a threat. So if you are unsuccessful in that, you might need to be deported. The Irish deportation system has been really slow and hasn't been really active, not knowing if they are going to make it very effective and kind of review it. Of course, it's a burning issue at the moment and people will be concerned.
Chanasi Puzo was the chairperson of a 2022 campaign called Justice for Undocumented People Living in Ireland. She says the government is being pressured by public opinion to act on the growing number of asylum seekers.
The locals like view us as people that came to depend on wholly on the government, coffers on false pretenses. So that's really something that they don't really like. And as for now, it's election time in most of these Western countries. And immigration is the hot issue topic at the moment.
Puzo, however, says there is at least one benefit to Botswana being classified as a safe nation.
For Botswana to be labeled as a safe country is good for the country, as that won't tarnish the reputation of the country, and it won't damage the potential investor confidence as well for the country. But for us, Botswana citizens living here in Ireland, it will affect us in a negative way.
In December, the European Union agreed to immigration reforms that will limit the number of asylum seekers. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Americans are concerned over Joe Biden's handling of the economy. Find out why after the break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, plus one 202-630-8011. That is plus one 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As we promised last week that we will air your proverbs every Wednesday, and today we have a proverb from Lanya in Central Equatorial State, specifically from the Pojulu community.
Hi, VOA. This is Lado Samson from Juba. I have a proverb in Pojulu language, and it goes, Tidoge angiro loso sonyoko kigbo. Literally, be a child who can be sent with soup. This proverb means that be someone who is trustworthy. Be someone who can be entrusted with goods of high value, property of high value, with responsibilities. Be a good person.
And that's words of wisdom from the Pojulu community in Central Equatorial, found in South Sudan. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new poll says Americans are concerned over President Joe Biden's handling of the economy, despite the administration's repeated touting of positive economic figures. The survey puts Biden's approval at 38% in January and predicts a tight race with challenger, former President Donald Trump. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
To hear the Biden administration tell it, the U.S. economy is on an upswing. Vice President Kamala Harris on the campaign trail in South Carolina.
Over the past 3 years, President Biden and I have lowered costs, created opportunity, and are building an economy that works for working people. We have created more than 14.5 million new jobs, increased wages for tens of millions of Americans. Today, consumer confidence is up, and consumer spending is an all-time high. And although we have more work to do, let us be clear, America's economy continues to be the strongest in the world.
The head of the U.S. Central Bank, which fiercely maintains its independence from political pressure, agrees. Jerome Powell is chair of the U.S. Federal Reserve.
We feel like inflation is coming down. Growth has been strong. The labor market is strong. What we're trying to do is identify a place where we're really confident about inflation, get it going back to 2%, so that we can then begin the process of dialing back the restrictive level.
But a new poll from research firm Ipsos shows that a rising number of American voters don't buy it. And that's hurting Biden's reelection chances. Cliff Young is president of Ipsos Public Affairs in the U.S.
Biden is entering into 2024 in a weakened position. We have him at this point at 38% approval rating. And that's important because based on our experience, our historical experience, a sitting president at 40% approval rating or better has better than a 50-50 chance of winning the next election.
Voters' top issue, Young says, is the economy, and not the bigger trends, but the nickels and dimes.
Peel that onion away, and they're really worried about inflation.
South Carolina's Democratic voters overwhelmingly supported Biden in a recent primary. But even supporters say they feel the pinch. Sandra Trower voted early in South Carolina's Democratic primary.
Groceries are high, higher than we've seen in a while. Gas is also. But what I'm encouraged by is mortgage interest rates are beginning to go down.
That, Young says, is a new spin off the Clinton-era political saying that American voters share one priority. It's the economy, stupid.
It's actually the inflation, stupid. And by the way, we really don't know how inflation behaves relative to politics, relative to public opinion. We haven't had a lot of experience in the United States in the last few generations with high rates of inflation.
Donald Trump has touted his economic acumen to voters on the campaign trail. The former president, however, is facing four criminal cases and a civil judgment over alleged business fraud, in which he's accused of wildly inflating his net worth. Is that likely to sway voters whose minds appear to be already made up? The world will find out in November. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Hamas leaders have responded to a hostage deal that would pose hostilities. He says the United States is studying that response intently and will discuss it in Israel on Wednesday. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had a packed day of diplomacy in the Middle East and shared this new development at a press conference in Qatar.
So together with Qatar and Egypt, we put forward, as you know, a serious proposal that was aimed at not simply repeating the previous agreement, but expanding it. As the Prime Minister just said, Hamas responded tonight. We're reviewing that response now, and I'll be discussing it with the government of Israel tomorrow.
Blinken said a lot of work remained to be done on a deal, but he continued to believe that an agreement was possible and essential. Qatar's Prime Minister, Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, said the reply from Hamas in general was positive. At the White House, President Joe Biden was more cautious, saying there is some movement on the hostage situation.
There's been a response from the opposition, but from Hamas, but it seems to be a little over the top. We're not sure where it is. There's a continuing negotiation right now.
No details of the deal have been revealed. Qatar has been working with the United States and Egypt to broker an agreement that would involve an extended pause in fighting and the release of the more than 100 hostages still held by Hamas. The U.S.-designated terrorist group staged an October 7th attack that killed 1,200 Israelis and triggered the war. Israeli attacks on Gaza have left more than 27,478 Palestinians dead, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Blinken arrived in Doha for talks after meeting with Egyptian leaders in Cairo. He started his fifth Middle East trip since the war began with a visit to Saudi Arabia. Blinken will hold talks in Israel Wednesday to discuss the hostage deal and Hamas response. One expert told VOA there are lots of obstacles. Brian Katulis is the vice president of policy at the Middle East Institute. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I think one of the key sticking points, Hamas really wants something that's more of a longer term, more permanent ceasefire, if you will. Israel wants all of its hostages back, but Hamas has for years in previous instances placed a higher price on Israel Defense Forces soldiers that they have in their custody.
On Monday, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant warned that Israel's ground forces could advance on the southern city of Rafah, where Palestinians were told they needed to flee to from the north. Gallant said every Hamas terrorist hiding in Rafah should know that his end would be the same as others, saying, surrender or die, there is no third option. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202-630-8011. That is +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And as we promised, we will be airing your proverbs every Wednesday. And our next proverb for today is from Western Equatorial State, specifically from the Zande community, or Azande community, rather.
A very good evening to VOA Africa. My name's Tomoyo David. I'm having a proverb in Zande language. It reads, "Ina sangangana kuligoyote," which means you cannot do bad to those who raise you up, who take care of you, for you to become whom you are, or you don't harm them. That is the meaning of the proverb.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, February 7, 2018. 2024. Your proverbs are confusing me. 2024. We now leave you with the song Lokiri by Franco Lokinyomi.
In 1800, my grandpa told me that ye mari lo kajun lo putu kane pulo ye mari de. Pero kajun na kungiro la durunda deba monyero woto gala dunoka lepe woti jika sinyiro na wa yumboko kuyase kumonye longiro na namedangiro nonuna kurangiro nabo. Namedangiro nonuna, uraka kitani. Namedangiro nonuna, urangiro nakoyo. Namedangiro nonuna, uraka soponi.
We've been listening to Franco Lokunyumi with the song Lokikiri. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. And remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bonga tikilo tiki denda na beri kukinga zimure kukinga zimusala. Hey, mona yoyota, boyu na beri bae. Hey, mona yoyota, mangu na beri bae. Bokaro kilo lulunge, ijo unda na wenyalo lakatine nyipa.